You are listening to the Holistic Travel Nurse Podcast. Thanks for stopping out and checking me out, and I hope you share it, give it a review. I did get this from another podcaster and some other podcasters that I love. This is the stuff that you will never hear on the TV. You got to turn off the propaganda and start listening to the true reporters and the people that are actually telling you what the hell's going on. And I decided to be one of those, and I decided to use my platform and my voice to get in the fight. And so this is such a good conversation. This was like a recording that was done for athletes and coaches and high-end with a whole bunch of doctors and some lawyers and some people talking about the jab and whistleblowing. And I wish this was done so much sooner than here getting it in August. But I hope that you share this and that you take consideration and realize that these are people that have been reading the science. So I hope you enjoy.
I joined us for a call tonight. I want to say, my name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. I am the host for tonight's call, but I want to thank Juan Osavin and Joey Gilbert for pulling this all together. We've done this since Friday afternoon, that we pulled all of this together so quickly. And I want to thank each one of every one of our participants for rearranging your schedule on a Sunday night at the last minute, no less, of your busy schedules to bring this together. And due to our really short period of time together, and since we are now running a few minutes late, I've asked each person when it's time for them to speak to just give a very short introduction of their very long and illustrious credentials, because we could be the whole 15 minutes on most of our speakers hearing what their backgrounds are. So you'll introduce them by know who they are. They're all over the internet. They're just amazing physicians who are willing to stand up and step out on this topic of COVID shots and the side effects. My background is that I served as the medical director and a full-time emergency medicine physician at a level 2 trauma center for 12 years before moving to Cleveland, Ohio. I have an integrative medical clinic now with multiple different practitioner types, and I'm always proud to say that we have treated patients from all 50 states and more than 18 countries, restoring them to health and removing most of their pharmaceutical drugs from their care. How I'm on this call to talk about problems associated with vaccines is that I've invested more than 45,000 hours into researching, writing, speaking, and publishing on problems associated with vaccines, and that spans a full 21 years. And I've identified 40 mechanisms of injury of how COVID shots can make you sick and even end your life. In the last 16 months, I've been interviewed more than 450 times on all sizes of platforms, from podcasts to radio to television, trying to sound the alarm on problems, on the risks associated with these shots. And in my opinion, these shots are all risk and no benefit. Tonight, I have put together, and graciously pulled together, several of the most highly credentialed physicians in the United States and probably around the world on this topic. We are mostly here to discuss the health risks of the COVID-19 shots and the impacts the shots will have on your athletes. Some injuries will be subtle and not show up for years. Some injuries will be immediate, will be career-ending, and possibly even life-ending. After the health risks are clearly explained, two lawyers, Tom Rentz and Joy Gilbert, will discuss and explain the legal ramifications of forcing these mandated shots. I believe that by the time this call is over, you will understand the ramifications of the decision to follow through with institutional mandates and government edicts to use this shot as a requirement to participate in sports or to be gainfully employed. With that, I want to introduce our first speaker, Ohio Brett, who is a former Division I college football player who grew up in a sports-filled family. He will be speaking to you from a perspective of your athletes. Brett, welcome to the call.
Dr. Tenpenny and our national and international audience, thanks for having me. Dr. Tenpenny, Ohio Brett here, is that better? Ohio Brett.com and Ohio Brett on Facebook. I'm a national speaker and creative fundraiser, and If I could get permission, we did not open in prayer. I'd like to open in prayer quickly.
Absolutely.
Let's all bow our heads. Hey, dear Lord, here we are. We're like children at your feet, Lord, and we already know the enemy doesn't want this call to happen, but it is happening, Lord. We have put on our helmet of salvation, our breastplate of righteousness, our belt of truth, the sandals of the gospel of peace of Jesus Christ, and our mighty shield of faith to protect us from the devil's arrows, and the sword where we go on offense, which is the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Please protect all of us on this call. Let everything be done in an orderly and efficient manner. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Well, everyone, I come from a background of sports. I grew up in a family where my father, Dr. Alan Bowl, had a 35-plus year career in intercollegiate athletics, starting off at Ohio State from 1975 to 87, where he was an assistant athletic director. And then he was named the head athletic director at the University of Toledo, and then Fresno State, and then the Kansas Jayhawks. Football coaches that he hired, the first one ever was Nick Saban. And I hope that all these coaches tonight will listen to these words of truth and take action. But Nick Saban, Pat Hill, Gary Pinkel, and Mark Mangino were the coaches that my dad hired, and I was honored to play Division I football for Nick Saban. But my call, you're going to coaches, agents, administrators, corporate leaders, you have world-class doctors courageous enough to share the truth, and a couple stud Atticus Finch type attorneys that are going to give you the legal path that you need to work. But I want to make a claim from all the athletes that you coaches say you love. You told us, Nick Saban, that you love us. You have to know that in your heart, what you're sharing with your players is not right. And you're going to get the evidence to hopefully you will take action, because that time is now. That time is now. This is like 1938 Germany. This is insane. So, yes, coaches, it's going to take courage. You're going to have to call your agent and your attorneys and know that you might be giving up millions of dollars, but what about the life and death of your players? What about their ability to have babies? But it's not just the players and former players. Because when you're the leader of a major college program or any sports team, you have players, you have alumni, you have fan bases, and you have a responsibility. So it's an honor for Ohio Brett to be part of this, and I'll look forward to closing us in prayer as well. Back to you, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And Doc, you're muted.
Dr. Tenpenny, you're muted.
He has to unmute me. He's got a setting that now it says, there we go.
Good. Now you're unmuted. Now you're unmuted.
Okay, good. So that was an introduction from a former athlete's perspective. So the next person that I want to invite to talk for the next 15 to 20 minutes is Dr. Peter McCullough. Dr. Peter McCullough is a cardiologist, epidemiologist, and again, has a list of credentials behind his name that we could fill up the whole evening with. Dr. Peter McCullough, thank you so much for joining us on the call. Please talk about the cardiovascular effects of these shots on young athletes. You have to unmute him also.
I got it. Thank you. Thanks, each and every one of you. So I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm an internist and cardiologist in Dallas, Texas. I'm at a major medical center, and I see and examine patients every day in my practice. I've been very involved in COVID-19 response, and I have a considerable number of peer-reviewed publications in this topic, and the U.S. Senate has relied upon my testimony in terms of guiding the country on some key issues. And I'm a regular contributor on Fox News and other major media to help interpret the data. I can tell you, as we sit here today, we have about 3,000 certified cases of myocarditis or heart inflammation that have occurred. That's what the CDC has confirmed. We have no idea how many more thousands of young people have been affected like this. The vaccines all have a dangerous mechanism of action where genetic material is taken up into the heart. And then as the heart starts to produce a form of protein called a spike protein, it causes inflammation in the heart. And the heart does not stand any type of foreign protein in it whatsoever. We have the heart muscle cells and then the support cells called satellite cells that are immune cells within the heart. And it manifests by chest pain, the development of heart failure, EKG changes, abnormal blood tests showing the heart's being injured, and then it progresses to heart failure or cardiovascular death in some people. The CDC reviewed this at 200 cases with the FDA, and their findings were that 90% of these young, largely young men in the young college athletes age, that they were hospitalized, about a quarter of them had reduced pumping function of their heart, and they had to go on heart failure medications for at least 3 to 6 months. They can't have any physical activity until we are sure that the injury is done to the heart. I've seen these patients in my clinic. I've reported them to the CDC. The CDC has called me to verify that that's in fact the case, that this is legitimate. And so I can tell you, as we sit here today, if the number is 2,800 or 3,000 in the database, this is a huge number since not that many young people have taken the vaccine. It's so important that the FDA has put an official warning on this, warning against the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for this. Some athletic programs have said, fine, we'll take the J&J vaccine. Well, the J&J separately has a warning for blood clots in the legs and the arms and the brain. So it's my recommendation as a doctor who sees and examines patients, particularly young athletes in this range, to not take the vaccine unless there was some type of specific reason. The vaccine should always be voluntary. It is research, and no government entity or athletic team or university can force a young student into research. It should be purely elective, and you just have to know what you're getting into. Once the vaccine's in your body, we can't get it out. It doesn't look like it's safe, and it doesn't even look like it works to prevent COVID-19. So those are my comments.
And what about the legalities of forcing this shot on people?
Well, we have the Office of Human Research Protections in the United States, and we know that to participate in research, that no one should receive any pressure, coercion, or the threat of reprisal. It's purely voluntary. The consent form that one signs to take the vaccine says it's completely voluntary. So I think the athletes should know, if they feel pressured by their team or forced by the university, you're going to be forced to then sign a form that says that you are voluntarily participating. So that's like someone holding a gun to your head and say, here, volunteer for the shot. So we know that's immoral, it's unethical, and from a civil perspective, it's illegal.
And what about the risk to pilots?
There have been sporadic reports. Pilots, we know that the spike protein that circulates in the body for at least 2 weeks or more causes blood clotting. That's how people who, older people with COVID-19 themselves get into trouble. But this spike protein is a super duper dose of this protein that that virus has. It directly causes blood clotting. And clearly, blood clotting is a risk, and FDA recognizes it with the vaccines. But if you sit for a long time on a plane or a flight or a bus, especially big people, big athletes, there's a great risk for blood clots in the legs or the arms, and if they shoot to the lungs, that can be fatal. And in fact, that's happened in a handful of pilots, probably more. It's one of the reasons why the flight attendants and the pilots don't want to take the vaccine.
And what do you think about the requirements being mandatory? What is your personal opinion on that?
They shouldn't be mandatory. The CDC says they're not mandatory. There's no government agency that says they're mandatory. In fact, the consent form says it's voluntary. So no external entity should make anything mandatory because, there's no diabetes drug that's mandatory. Even the athletes who take the meningococcal vaccine before they go to school, that's voluntary. But the meningococcal vaccine is safe. Most of your athletes have taken that. There's been zero deaths after the meningococcal vaccine. With the COVID-19 vaccines, the CDC has certified 12,000 deaths now. So it's night and day difference between the standard vaccine and this new research or experimental vaccine.
And in the last minute that we have before we move to our next panelist, what message would you like to leave with all the people that are here tonight, because there's quite a large number in a diverse crowd. Dr. Peter McCullough, what would you like to close with?
Well, I've told America on National News multiple times, I don't think any person under age 30 should ever consider receiving one of these vaccines. One of the best ways to stay healthy is stay free of the vaccine. If you contract COVID-19, no treatment is needed for young people, but if there is severe symptoms, there's very good treatment. There's available medicines we use in combination. There's a variety of telemedicine services you can access even for free. Get these medications and get through the illness. And the other thing I think is a complete overreach is testing athletes if they're not sick. The only thing you need to know is you should not show up to practice or to a game sick. You should pull yourself out. But the idea of testing people when they feel well, the virus isn't spread among well people. Even the World Health Organization says stop doing that. So any coaches or athletes on the line here, just stop all this routine testing. It's not supportable by science or even by any regulatory agency. The FDA never approved this testing. Just when someone's sick, then get a test and take yourself out of competition. Severe symptoms, seek treatment.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Dr. Peter McCullough. And I think with that, we were able to get back on our scheduled time. So that worked out to be just great. So the next panelist that I want to introduce to everyone tonight is Dr. Richard Fleming. He also is a cardiologist with a very, very long and illustrious resume and is very important to this conversation. Dr. Richard Fleming, welcome to the call. Give us a brief introduction of you and talk about the COVID shots and the impact on cardiovascular health.
Well, thank you for the invitation, Sherry, to be here and for everybody who's coming here. I'm a physicist nuclear cardiologist, which is a cardiologist coming up to take more training, and an attorney. In 1994, I introduced at American Heart Association the theory that explains inflammation and heart disease. And in that theory, I very specifically stated that viruses and bacteria play a role. And what we saw when SARS-CoV-2 originally hit the scenes were people that already had diseases that had inflammation and blood clotting, so heart disease, strokes, diabetes, cancer. Those individuals, when they saw this cancer and were not treated for that inflammation and blood clotting, had bad outcomes. Many of them died. 600,000 in the United States. But when a person transfers this virus back and forth, you might transfer hundreds or thousands or perhaps even 10,000. What happens with these vaccines is something substantially different. The vaccines actually carry the genetic code for the most dangerous part of this virus. And the part of this virus we're talking about is the spike protein. Instead of having hundreds or thousands or 10,000 spike proteins coming into you because of the number of viruses, the Pfizer-Moderna vaccines, the lipid nanoparticle mRNA vaccines, deliver 13.1 billion into your cells. The AstraZeneca and Janssen, typically referred to as Johnson & Johnson, has 50 billion. The Novavax simply injects those spike proteins directly into you after being grown in moth cells. So we're talking about massive orders of magnitude. And what we're seeing in the VAERS reporting, the adverse event reporting, are healthy people responding as healthy people do. When you get billions of these spike proteins being made by your cells, that's a massive overload of your body being interpreted as a major league infection. And so what we're seeing are younger, healthy people doing what younger, healthy people do, which is to respond to this massive attack to the body, and they are producing the same inflammation and blood clotting. Now, in addition to the theory and the way to measure this in over 1,800 people that we studied around the world for treatments, I've also written several chapters in textbooks, cardiology textbooks on heart failure. And this is clearly one of the reasons why people will have heart failure. And doing this to somebody at a younger age is going to be something that lives with them their entire life. These viral cardiomyopathies or weaknesses to the heart, or this inflammation and blood clotting occurring with these vaccines that we're seeing in the VAERS reporting, are causing permanent damage to the heart. Some of that may be resolvable. But by and large, once that tissue damage is done, it's going to be permanent. My understanding of coaches, and having had one in my family who was a basketball coach in Iowa, with girls' basketball team, they're very conscientious about their students. In fact, coaches routinely will step up and protect their students, where other people will just say, have at them. So the coaches here have a unique opportunity to protect the students and prevent them from being harmed. One final thing, everybody's heard about the Delta variant. Vaccines in the past, like the meningococcal one that Dr. McCullough mentioned earlier, it takes a virus that we normally see, and it takes all of the types of the virus. Now, there's not just one type of SARS-CoV-2 virus any more than there's one type of bacteria or one type of person. So in the past, when we've taken vaccines, we've weakened the virus, taken the whole lot of it, and allowed it to be injected into people. So you saw everything. What's happened with this spike protein injection is that we've only coded for a certain type of spike protein, and that has produced something called selective pressure. Now, these Delta viruses, this variant has existed along with 16 other variants, but the vaccines have allowed us to pressure the Delta variant into a prominence. It's done a very good job of going after the first ones that were vaccinated for, but it pressured the system to take the more infective Delta variant, the Delta virus, as everybody's calling it now, and make it the primary virus. In fact, in 2 months, actually in the last month, most civilized countries that have been vaccinating people following the vaccination program now report 80 to 100% of their SARS-CoV-2 viruses being the Delta variant. And it's not the only variant out there. If we turn around and start attacking that one, the Lambda variant, which is the next one coming up, and all the others will be pressured to be pronounced. And so this vaccination program is not being successful. Finally, even if they authorize these with FDA approval, let's look at the real data on these vaccines. If you go read the emergency use authorization documents, and if you can't find them, they're on my website, FlemingMethod.com, when I'm in Fleming, you can find the emergency use authorization documents. When you go to those documents and you read the data, the same data the FDA got, and you ask a fundamental question, do vaccinated individuals have a statistically lower chance of developing COVID or dying than non-vaccinated, you will find the data shows there's no benefit to the drug. Now, if Dr. McCullough and I came into the room, or you, Dr. Tenpenny, came into the room and said, I want you to take this medicine to prevent you from having high blood pressure. Now, it won't do anything more for you than not taking it. Nobody in their right mind would allow us to give you that medicine, and we, none of the three of us, would be dumb enough to give it to you. But these drug vaccines are being given to people when there is no proven benefit that they COVID. What they have done is produced an immune response, particularly in healthy people, that is causing now more than 5,000 cases of heart attacks and heart damage, this weakened muscle. And it has done nothing but pressured the virus to demonstrate itself into the Delta variant, and it will if we continue to prove the other variants. This is not a virus that's going away. This is not a virus that's going to be chased down by a vaccine. The way we deal with this is to treat it with medications like doctors have been. The federal government decided that they wanted to play doctor, and there's a number of medications out there that work. If you're a coach and you're thinking about your students, and you are, and your families, and your children, and your grandchildren, you don't want them to be taking these types of experimental, even if they fully FDA approve it, which it's expected they're going to do it. That's a great way to pressure people. And if you look at the news, they think that's going to make more mandates. Well, last time I checked, just because the government said we want to make it FDA approved doesn't mean it's safe, because if you look at the FDA's track record, in the last 2 years, they pulled twice as many drugs off the market as they actually approved, which means there was something going on in their initial approval program, which wasn't all that good. So if you're a coach, this is not the type of thing to subject your young men and women to. It's your job and duty to protect them. And that means when the government doesn't protect them, you protect them.
Dr. Richard Fleming, that was amazing. I do want to circle back around to something that you said that was really, really important, is that what is the actual effect of the spike protein in common language that anybody here can understand? What is the actual anatomical, physiological effect of the spike protein on the heart and on the cardiovascular system?
Well, the spike protein itself actually will attach to the ACE2 receptor, but because it causes an immune response, your body is designed to try to kill off invading organisms. So your body's immune response will release chemicals that attack the cells that are infected. So if that spike protein is attaching to the cells of your heart, your immune system is going to say, kill those cells to take out that spike protein. It's going to form blood clots to try to starve off those cells so that the virus, because it's a spike protein, it says this is the virus, can't get out of there. So you're going to form damage to cells. You're going to form blood clots. And I know we're talking about the heart, but let's also recognize the fact that this thing is crossing into the brain and the blood-brain barrier, causing permanent diseases like mad cow disease, that's the lay term for it, and Alzheimer's disease. And we've seen it in the animal models. We've seen the heart disease in the animal models. We've seen the brain disease in the animal models. In the animal models, it took, the equivalent in people will be 1.5 years. So if you want to look at that and go, wow, you're willing to risk an athlete's life, if you're willing to risk your spouse's life, if you're willing to risk your children and grandchildren's life, we will live to see these consequences. We're already seeing them. And if the VAERS effect, if that reporting system is 1 or 10%, you know, you can do the math, put 1 0 or 2 0s behind it, and you get the actual numbers. But here's the bottom line: 9,000 deaths is more than enough deaths. 5,000, 6,000 heart damages, heart attacks, and weakened heart muscles is enough. To add more to that, to add insult to injury, is not doing anything. And if you track Israel, you track Iceland, you track these countries, with the larger vaccination numbers, they're not seeing an eradication of anything. All they're seeing is a shift, and the numbers are piling up. So you've got drugs that aren't having any beneficial effect, but they're having consequences. No other drug would you go to your doctor and have the doctor prescribe and say, this won't do anything to you, but it will damage your heart. It'll cause inflammation of your heart. It'll cause brain damage to you, but you take it anyway. Patients wouldn't do that. People aren't that dumb. And common sense is something, last time I checked, coaches, you've got common sense. The government may not have. Apply it to your students. Apply it to the people you're caring about.
And what would you say to the pilots who are on this call tonight, who, you know, as we all heard, United Airlines is now making 100% all of his employees be fully vaccinated, I believe, by October the 1st. You know, as we know, as a cardiologist and me as an ER doc, you know, Dr. Fleming, people that have had increased risk of blood clots have always had increased risk of flying without anything else on board. Now we are injecting pilots who sit all day for a living. What kind of risk is this going to introduce into that population?
Well, everybody knows that if you don't move somebody around, the increased risk of a blood clot is already there. Now you add insult to injury. I mean, one of the things that we did wrong in the hospitals was not to treat patients with heparin and drugs like that to reduce the risk of blood clotting. Yet we've always taken patients that were bedridden, who couldn't get up and move around. You know, ventilator patients aren't getting up and moving around. These patients aren't getting up and moving around. We never tolerated this in the past. We always knew we needed to be treating people. You don't put this type of stuff into somebody's body without dealing with a consequence. Pilots, don't take these shots. And I've said this before, there's going to be an uncomfortable price to pay. But here's an interesting thought. If all the airline pilots that didn't want to get these shots said, we're not getting the shots, how many planes would be grounded? And how long, I mean, you did this to get better salaries and better benefits. This is a better benefit. Your life, you know, your ability to take and provide a living for your family. If the doctors and nurses in this country would stand up and do the same thing and say, you know what, we're not coming into the hospital, You remember in 2020, doctors and nurses, we were the heroes, right? Now we're too dumb to know whether we should be taking a vaccine. What happened? In 1 year, did we become dumb? We went from heroes to stupid. Pilots, don't take the... If you've got an infection, get treated for it. There's medications for it. There's plenty of us that have proven that and provide the medications. Don't do something to put yourself at risk. Ask a fundamental question. If that was your child flying the plane, your odor, and your child's flying the plane, and you knew that taking these vaccines were going to increase the risk of a blood clot, which means a heart attack or a stroke, and they're flying a plane, would you want your son or daughter to be doing that? And if the answer is no, then you've already given the answers for whether you should.
And I totally agree with what you said, Dr. Richard Fleming, about standing together. I mean, if all of the pilots for United Airlines, even half of them, said not doing it and grounded those planes, how long would it take before a week, probably less, before the economic crunch, the crush of not doing that would make them change that? If the doctors in the hospitals and the nurses in the hospital said, nope, not doing it, and they all walked out at the same time and stayed out, how long would it take before that economic crush started to change some of those things?
Right, and I think people that are flying and traveling should take the same approach. If an airline forces their pilots to take these vaccines, then don't buy tickets on that airline. There's other ways to travel. Is it uncomfortable? Sure it is. You know, I have plenty of talks scheduled in the next month or two. You know, I guess I can drive.
Or
you know?
Go by Zoom, right? Or go by Zoom.
You know, the point is that everybody needs to realize that if you don't want things done to your body, you need to stand up. And I know the other attorneys are probably going to address the legal stuff, but there's plenty of cases that we've talked about, you know, including the cases out of Missouri that the Supreme Court held, I think it's Cruzan, if I remember correctly, without going back to it, ruled that you cannot force a human being to take a treatment. This is no different. And accordingly, since the Supreme Court has ruled on that, they can't force you. And as far as informed consent is concerned, it's a violation of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. It's a violation of the Nuremberg Code, and it's a violation of the Declaration of Helsinki to vaccinate people or to give a medication or to provide a test to somebody without providing informed consent. That's what they did in Nazi Germany. And if you want to know what you would have done in 1930s Germany, you're look in the mirror right now. It's going to tell you, because a lot of people stood up and said, you know, these are bad people. Well, guess what everybody did in Nazi Germany during the 1930s? The doctors went along with it. The judges went along with it. The politicians went along with it. And when everything was said and done, they were held accountable. And I know it's off topic, but I'm already working with people on ICC cases and European cases. We're filing charges on the people that were involved in this, because the people that were involved in this gain-of-function virus are the same people preventing doctors from using treatments, are the same people that are benefiting from the vaccines. Enough is enough is enough. Oh, and one last thing, Dr. Fauci is not the epitome of science. As somebody who's done 53 years of research in his life, for Dr. Fauci to suggest that he is science, I find extremely offensive, because I'm a scientist, I want facts. And the facts in the EUA show these drug vaccines don't work.
Ooh, amen, brother. Dr. Peter Fleming, absolutely. I mean, Dr. Richard Fleming, I'm sorry. I'm just so excited. I've got everybody's names all messed up. Dr. Richard Fleming, thank you so much for bringing all of that information to us tonight. And that is a great way to end your segment of this presentation, to say enough is enough is enough. So the next person I want to bring that we brought together tonight, who also has an amazing set of credentials that could spend the whole rest of the evening just talking about all of his different background and credentials, is Dr. Michael Yaden. Dr. Michael Yaden is a former Pfizer research scientist, and he has amazing credentials that I want to introduce him to everybody. And again, I would like for you to broaden the conversation a little bit, Dr. Gayden. We've talked about cardiovascular things. We've talked a little bit about blood clots. But anything else in terms of other types of side effects and complications, I'd like for you to bring to the table tonight. You're muted.
Yes. Good evening, Dr. Tenpenny. Thank you, and colleagues. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I'm speaking to the coaches and any players that are here. And I'm gonna add another reason to the ones you've heard from Dr. McCulloch and Dr. Fleming not to take these COVID-19 gene-based vaccines, and it's reproductive health harms. So just in a few moments, yes, I'm Dr. Mike Eden, I'm a PhD, so I'm not a proper doctor, I don't treat patients, but I do deal with research science, and I've been a professional researcher for 32 years. I was at Pfizer for 17 years. I was vice president there and head of worldwide research for respiratory products. The last 10 years, I've been independent. I was the founding CEO of a successful biotech, and we created a medicine and sold it to the world's biggest drug company. So there I was, late 50s, early retired, enjoying my life. And then I've thrown myself into this cauldron. I have never made a public statement prior to COVID-19 pandemic, never. So why am I all over the internet? It's because I determined in my country, United Kingdom, as early as April last year, my government was lying to me, and their research advisors, some of whom I've known 30 years ago, are lying to me. I found that very frightening, and it's not got any better. So I'm going to talk about reproductive health harms. And unfortunately, because I'm a scientist, I try and piece all the information together. And I'm drawn to the conclusion that it's deliberate. What do I mean it's deliberate? So colleagues have talked about spike protein. It's a choice they have made in these gene-based vaccines to make your body manufacture a part of the virus. And as been said, these are not benign. They are essentially biologically active molecules that can trigger blood clots and other problems. So that's just not a very clever design. Every one of these COVID-19 gene-based vaccines all involve spike protein. So I didn't like that straight away. They're, as we have heard, completely new technology. That means if anyone tells you they're completely safe, they're lying, or they're just talking out of their backside. You can't know what the long-term consequences of something is until the long-term has passed, right? So straightforward as that. So I find it offensive that they tell, for example, women of childbearing years, it's entirely safe to take it, or it's safe to take it if you're pregnant. We don't know any of those things. So I'm just pointing out to you, it's not true that they're safe, they cannot know it, and that's kind of a malign thing. So really quickly then, reproductive health harms, because I've discovered a couple of things, just as I've read a lot around COVID-19 and these vaccines. What have I learned recently? We talk about the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, particularly, they are messenger RNA. So they are some Star Trek gene-based product, and it's very vulnerable. So it has to be wrapped up in lipid nanoparticles. It turns out we've known for at least 9 years, 2012 paper I read, all of these products home into the ovaries and testicles. I remember it being discussed as a particular problem for pharmaceutical delivery. I'm afraid that's what they do. And the designers of these COVID-19 vaccines and their formulators knew that. It's not an accident. And that's what happened. We found through a Freedom of Information request by someone else, by the way, and I got hold of the report, at least one of these vaccines definitely concentrates in the ovaries of rats to a huge degree compared with the background levels. So, and then I found another paper that said all of them of this basic design concentrate in rats and mice ovaries. That's what's happening in females right now. There's no data to the contrary. So I think that's a deliberate choice. And it's worse than that. There's a second hit for females. So first, if you have a concentration of these spike protein producing vaccines in your particular tissue, in this case ovaries, but also testicles, it's not benign. It's going to be harming those tissues. We don't know exactly in what way, but it's not good. You do not want this in your tissue. But there's a second hit for females. About 8 months ago, with a German doctor, I wrote a petition to the European Medicines Agency because I had observed with him that spike protein is slightly similar to an essential protein in pregnancy called syncytin 1. Slightly similar. Just enough for me, as I'm a toxicologist as well as a pharmacologist. I was just concerned enough. I thought, funny, these look a little similar. I'm worried that when your body makes an immune response to the spike protein, it can also attack your placenta. And of course, people called me a conspiracy theorist. And they have trashed my reputation. Unfortunately, a paper came out a couple of months ago, and that's exactly what they find. They find antibodies against their own placenta after 15 women were vaccinated with one of these vaccines. It's just appalling. I mean, I couldn't believe it when I read it. So now we've got spike protein is a bad choice. They could have picked something else of the vaccine, of the virus. They wrapped it in lipid nanoparticles that concentrates in ovaries of test animals, and that's what it'll be doing in humans. Bad choice. It raises antibodies against women's placentas. Bad choice. I mean, do you think this is an accident? I'm afraid I don't anymore. So that's a problem. But unfortunately, it's not just, it's also reproductive health harm risks to males, in that they do concentrate in testicular tissue, and that the reason might be because there's a lot of these receptors that was mentioned earlier, ACE2. But again, it's not accidental. They knew that. You can work it out by design before you start. Now, there's not been very much work in male health, but certainly severe COVID patients who do have high concentrations of spike protein in their testes have deranged ratios of their hormones, including testosterone. So guys, you know that's not a good thing. It could affect your fertility. And if you have a partner who gets vaccinated, I'm very concerned that they may not be able to have children. And this could be a persistent problem, potentially very persistent. So what am I going to say before I wrap up? I would say two things. Yes, it's been emphasized, but I'll say it again. If you're young and fit, you are not at risk from this virus. Why the hell are we even considering protecting people from a disease they don't get ill from? And as Dr. McCulloch and others have said, there are plenty of good, safe, well-understood, old, generic, cheap medicines. So, you don't need to fear this virus. It's not as bad as they say. If you're young and healthy, it's almost certainly not going to make you ill. And in the unlikely event you get ill, there's plenty of good medicines. Why would we blaze away at the whole population with an experimental gene-based vaccine where we have identified loads of risks with it already, some of them real? Why would we do that? And so here's the other thing. If you are not sick, then you can't spread it. This is just BS, this idea that you can give someone a disease you don't have. It literally is as funny as that, except it's not funny. Respiratory viruses are transmitted from one person to another when you have symptoms, and you have to have symptoms in order to have enough virus in your chest to cough it out and infect someone else. If you're fit and well and you feel fit and well, you cannot have enough of this in your airway to infect someone else. So if they tell you you're being selfish, you need to take this vaccine to protect others, that's not true either. Why are they doing this? I worry that ultimately it's going to lead to vaccine passports, which is a short form for digital ID. Now, I'm a scientist. I was retired, wealthy. I've thrown my reputation into the toilet. And I've worked like crazy for a year. You can decide whether you think I am telling the truth, because I'm getting nothing for it. And I am telling the truth, and I'm terrified for my children and grandchildren. So one last request I've got for you. This is really important. I've only discovered this recently. And it's kind of almost the brainwashing of just fear porn all the time pouring out of every single media outlet, from TV, radio, internet, and so on. We're all being programmed to be frightened. And when you're frightened, you follow the leader. That's what they're doing. They're frightening the hell out of you, closing your businesses, stay-at-home orders. And the idea is to frighten you, and then they'll say, go this way, let's have a vaccine passport, all will be well. You do what you like, but I think you should not take the vaccine. You must object most strenuously against vaccine passports, because they don't add anything to safety. Like I just said, if you don't have symptoms, you cannot be a threat to anyone else. You don't need a digital ID to prove that. So don't let them do it. It's a one-way street to total control by whoever owns the database. Seriously, I'm terrified of that. So my last thing is, when you get to the end of this webinar, If you think, I've now got a few doubts, because you really should have some doubts. If you've got doubts, please do one thing for me. Say to your colleagues in public, your family in public, friends in public, in the store, in the shop, in the, on the sidewalk. You go, do you know, I've got some doubts about what I'm being told. Because you don't have to be a scientist and justify it. Just say, I don't feel confident anymore. I don't trust what I'm being told. Because when you do that, what happens is you'll find people around you will go, hey, do you know, I don't feel good about this either. That starts you seeking proper information. And when you get proper information, I think the scales fall from your eyes and you realize it's just a complete fraud. Anyway, I'll pause there.
Yes, Dr. Yeager, thank you so much for that, and thank you for bringing up the details about the infertility. I know that this is a question that's come up frequently, and since you've looked at all the Pfizer data because you used to work there, what about the transmission through contact, through sexual intercourse, through kissing, through touching? What about passing that spike protein on if some of these young athletes who are age 12 and up and they're young and they're maybe in their young 20s, and they are now probably getting married and thinking about having a family, what will this spike, what is the possibility of when they get one of these shots about the spike protein having an effect on their sexual partner?
Yeah, I personally think it's unlikely. I'm not going to claim this. I haven't got the data. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. I just think, for me, it's not at the top of my list. It exists as a concern. And the reason is that if I was injected by the vaccine, my body now is going to make gazillion copies of the spike protein. If I have a lot of it, I guess I could secrete it onto my skin or saliva, semen, and so on. I just don't think the dose that someone would get for being nearby me is going to be toxic. But, you know, so it's not a top concern for me anyway, but I wouldn't argue against others being concerned.
Because we do know of an infant, at least one, if not more infant, that has died from a mother who got one of the shots postpartum and then passed the spike protein to the infant through breast milk. They developed thrombocytopenia, which for the listeners, that's low platelets, and they ended up dying from that transmission factor that happened. So in my opinion, I do believe that there is a distinct possibility. In fact, in the Pfizer study, it actually said that if you got the injection, men should not have unprotected sex for up to 6 weeks, and women should not get married or should not get pregnant for up to 3 months. So to me, that says they know that there is at least a theoretical risk, if not an absolute risk. And now that some of the documents are coming out, are being leaked from the internal documents from Pfizer, of showing all the damage that they knew was happening with these shots.
Sure. Yeah.
I do believe that it's a concern worth considering when you're a young person who's being mandated to get this shot, to go to school, to participate in sports, or an adult that's being mandated to get the shot in order to have employment.
This is a good time for a break. Inflation. It's a thing of the past, right?